Omen, Owen, Chapter 9, A Message from God. Well, I don't suppose you have ever read a message straight from God before, have you? Let me qualify that by saying that we created God in our own image, and that no entity beyond us exists, so therefore we are in fact the only God, and as such may speak on his behalf. Of course, on the outside chance that the skeptical tenets of solipsism prevail, I am indeed alone, and being God is a complete waste of time. Religious people always get shocked when I do this, and I always remind them that they too may speak as God, if they so choose, but no one ever does, because they're all afraid they might be making a mistake and have to suffer retribution at the hands of the devil in the future. There are perhaps a dozen different religions that have a God figure that is male and gave his only begotten son to the earth to be crucified. He was, and then rose 3 days later and went to heaven. The Egyptian Horus is the one most closely resembling Jesus, and as amply pointed out in the movie Zeitgeist, the sun is actually a reference to the sun, S-U-N, and it's dipping to the horizon in late December and then beginning to rise again 3 days later. All of these figures were mythical, except Christians expect you to believe that J.C. was a real person. The problem with that is there were many historians at the time and no record of J.C. or his disciples or the crucifixion, except for a few faked recordings constructed later. So, I'm not a male. I'm not the father of a male. This is speaking as God again. That represented one race and sect and became crucified. I don't live in heaven listening to everyone's prayers. I don't decide who lives or dies. I kill everyone. I also created everyone. I didn't kick the devil out of heaven. As a matter of fact, I am the devil too. I don't want you to worship me. I just want you to settle down, take care of yourself and the rest of humanity, and start using a bit of common sense. Much of the following cannot be better worded than found on the web in worldwide cyberspace, and almost none of it has cited authors. The quotations are from public domain sources, and no quotes are shown as they are intermixed with my comments and my editing. Many of the statements credited to the religions and social systems listed below have huge amounts of caveats and apply to different times and sects of the belief, so those below are generalizations and popular views. Now I will say here, this is an aside, I cannot pronounce many of these things, and I have tried again and again and again and again, so I will pause before I will say it as best I can, and I apologize for my inability to pronounce these words, but there's nothing I can do about it. I may spell some of them out rather than pronouncing them. Advaita Vedanta. Many of the early Eastern belief systems have been misrepresented by Western theologues. Advaita Vedanta is a subschool of the Vedanta, literally end or the goal of the Vedas in Sanskrit, school of Hindu philosophy. Other major subschools of Vedanta are Dvaita and Vishishadvaita. That's V-I-S-I-S-H-A-D-V-A-I-T-A. Advaita literally means non-duality. It's often called a monistic system of thought. The word Advaita essentially refers to the identity of the self, Atman, and the whole, Brahman. The key source texts for all schools of Vedanta are the... Now here's a toughie. I really can't say this one. It's P-R-A-S-T-H-A-N-A-T-R-A-Y-I. The canonical texts consists of the Upanishads, Bhagavad Gita, and the Brahma Sutras. The first person to explicitly consolidate the principles of Advaita Vedanta was Adi Shankara. Non-duality refers to the popular philosopher of the mind-body, René Descartes, and means mind only, or not what René was talking about at all. Advaita, being described in terms of non-duality, is a deliberate misrepresentation, but it is also described in this way because so many Western thinkers have no idea what the philosophy of consciousness really is, and the rest of them are trying to discredit it. This is also the reason that idealism is so vague, because most philosophers are realists, or rather materialists, and even many of the idealists eventually soften their positions later. A famous quote from Vivekacu, that's another one I can't say, one of the Prakara Grathas, that's a philosophical treatise, that succinctly summarizes his philosophy is, Brahman, and this is actually in Sanskrit, okay, here we go, Brahman Satya Jagat Mithya Jaivo Brahmava Napra. I apologize to the Hindus for that. Brahman is the only truth. This is what it means. Brahman is the only truth, and that's Brahman with a M-A-N, not a M-I. Brahman spelled with an M-I-N is like a preacher or a holy man. Brahman is the only truth. The world is illusion, and there is ultimately no difference between Brahman and the individual self. That's another way of saying we are God. Now, I'm not going to quote any more than that, because it gets very complicated, and if you or anywhere else were to read the Advaita, the confusion would cause you to miss the important points. Oddly, I wrote the laws of reality and the entirety of Figmentalism before I really understood these Hindu texts myself. And of course, I really don't understand them anyways. But I understand the basic thrust of it. I was shocked that I had gone through school to grade 13 and never heard a single thing about this way of thinking. Actually, I even thought I had invented the idea myself until I found this information. It is important to note that Brahman is just the word used by the Hindus to note the only truth, and is completely accurate and can in no way be refuted. The world is illusion, and the Vedas are utterly, utterly correct and cannot be considered a belief or a religion. Buddhism. Buddhism is a set of teachings usually described as religion. However, some definitions of religion would exclude it, or some forms of it. One point of view says that it is a body of philosophers influenced by the teachings of Siddhartha Gautama, also known as Gautama Buddha. Another point of view says it is the teachings to guide one to directly experience reality. Many recent scholars regard it as plurality rather than a single entity. Buddhism is also known as Buddha Dharma or Dhamma, which means roughly teachings of the awakened one in Sanskrit and Pali, languages of ancient Buddhist texts. Buddhism began around the 5th century BCE with the teachings of Siddhartha Gautama, hereafter referred to as the Buddha. The middle way is often described as the practice of non-extremism, a path of moderation away from the extremes of self-indulgence and opposing self-mortification. It also refers to taking the middle ground between certain metaphysical views. For example, that things ultimately either exist or do not exist. An explanation of the state of nirvana and perfect enlightenment, where all dualities fuse and create and cease, pardon me, to exist as separate entities. I have a thing in here that says C, S-E-O-N-G-C-H-E-O-L. I don't know what that means. Buddhists deem it necessary to avoid the question of whether existence is imaginary or not, but in doing so, within their teachings, the possibility is always apparent. Now I have an aside here. This passage inspired the name of this book, A Moderate Way. According to the scriptures, in his lifetime, the Buddha refused to answer several philosophical questions on issues such as whether the world is eternal or non-eternal, finite or infinite, unity or separation of the body and the self, complete inexistence of a person after nirvana and then death, etc. The Buddha had remained silent. One explanation for this is that such questions distract from practical activity for realizing enlightenment. Another is that such questions assume the reality of world, self, person. So reality is not assumed, nor the possibility rejected, and it is important to note that Buddhists do not have a god figure, only a prophet, although some forms of this belief system are viewed as worshippers, though that's not common. Most view Buddhism as aligned with Advaita Vedanta and avoiding the confrontation of duality and non-duality. Dharma. From the A-T-H-A-R-V-A-V-E-D-A, and in classical Sanskrit, the stem is thematic, dharma. And in brackets I have D-E-V-A-N-A-G-A-R-I. And in Pali, it takes the form of dhamma. It is also often rendered dharam in contemporary Indo-Aryan. Monier Williams attempts to gesture at the semantic field of the spiritual and religious meanings of the term with virtue, morality, religion, religious merit, those things meaning dharma itself. It being used in most or all philosophies and religions of Indian origin, sometimes summarized under the umbrella term of dharmic faiths, including Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism, and Sikhism, and is difficult to provide a single, concise definition for dharma. The word has a long and varied history and straddles a complex set of meanings and interpretations. In modern Indian languages such as Hindi, dharma can also mean simply religion. Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism, and Sikhism are called Hindu Dharma, Buddha Dharma, Jain Dharma, and Sikh Dharma, respectively. In scripture translations, dharma is often best left untranslated, as it has acquired a lively life of its own in English that is more expressive than any simplistic translation. Common translation and glosses include right way of living, divine law, path of righteousness, order, faith, natural harmony, rule, fundamental teachings, and duty. So obviously, English people don't really understand it, and it really can't be translated. Dharma may be employed to render the rules of the entwining operation and relationship of body, mind, and universe, microcosm and macrocosm, the binding metaphysical system, laws of reciprocity, and comportment in and of an ethical and energetic complex. For many Buddhists, the Dharma most often means the body of teachings expounded by the Buddha. The word is also used in Buddhist phenomenology as a term roughly equivalent to phenomena, a basic unit of existence and or experience. Other uses include Dharma, normally spelled with a small d to differentiate, which refers to a phenomenon or constituent factor of human experience. This was gradually expanded into a classification of constituents of the entire material and mental world, rejecting the substantial existence of permanent entities, which are qualified by possibly changing qualities. Buddhist A-B-H-I-D-H-A-R-M-A philosophy, which enumerated 75 dharmas, came to propound that these constituent factors are the only type of entity that truly exists. This notion is of particular importance for the analysis of human experience. Rather than assuming that mental states inhere to a cognizing subject, pardon me, or the soul substance, Buddhist philosophers largely propose that mental states alone exist as momentary elements of consciousness, and that a subjective perceiver is assumed. At the heart of Buddhism is a denial of an I, and hence the delusion, as a separate self-existing entity. As usual, these statements are from translations, and some of us are without the benefit of true enlightenment, so they make some sense, but certainly are not viewed as obviously monistic or non-dual as Advaita Vedanta. Still, Dharma allows only the illusion of all, and as one, but assumes the material as a quality. Is Confucianism a religion? Most religions can be defined as having a set god or group of gods, an organized priesthood, a belief in a life after death, and organized traditions. Thus, it is debatable whether Confucianism could be called a true religion, while it prescribes a great deal of ritual, little of it could be construed as worship or meditation in a formal sense. However, Tian is sacred to many Confucians. Confucius occasionally made statements about the existence of otherworldly beings that sound distinctly agnostic and humanistic to European and American ears. Thus, Confucianism is often considered a secular ethical tradition and not a religion. It is best described as a philosophy with special rituals and beliefs. Its effect on Chinese and other East Asian societies and cultures has been immense and parallels the effect of religious movements seen in other cultures. Those who follow the teachings of Confucius say that they are comforted by it. It includes a great deal of ritual, and in its Neo-Confucian formulation gives a comprehensive explanation of the world, of human nature, etc. Moreover, religions in Chinese culture are not mutually exclusive entities. Each tradition is free to find its specific niche, its field of specialization. One can practice religions such as Taoism or Taoism, Christianity, Judaism, Sikhism, Jainism, Islam, Shinto, Buddhism or Zoroastrianism, and still profess Confucian beliefs. Of course, monotheistic religion would not tolerate such a two-pronged faith, as they see themselves as the only way to the truth. This ends part one.